Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Good evening to anyone that's out there today on this Saturday, the 6th of September. This is Harleen the Dream Builder on Booker T. Washington Speaks from our African American family room. We certainly are looking forward to a discussion. And last week, I believe the topic was discussed, but I wasn't able to participate, and so we'd like to certainly open up the scope of that discussion. But in the history, what we do as a regular introduction to the show, I'd like to ask you to join me in prayer, and I'll say it in Arabic and English. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Maliki Yawmiddin. Iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'in. Ihdina siratal mustaqim. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. The translation from the Arabic that was recited in English is as follows. We seek refuge with God, Allah, away from the cursed devil. With the name of God, Allah, most gracious, most merciful, praise be to Allah, cherished and sustainer of the worlds. Thee alone we worship, and thy aid do we seek. Show us a straight way, the way on those in whom thou bestowed thy grace, those whose portion is not wrath and who go not astray in their duty and mission to you. Again, this is Harleen the Dream Builder, and I am working as a co-host with our moderator and founder, the professor who is the senior great grandson of Booker T. Washington. So, professor, I don't know if you want me to continue with the topic or do you want to say anything now, sir?
What I do, I want to welcome our guests that have joined us. Just to let the audience know, this is not an archived show from September. This is actually current. So tonight, October the 6th, 2018, and we're actually going to continue to discuss the topic from last week. Last week we began talking about the topic, African-American urban street gangs dangerous for American society. African-American urban street gangs dangerous for American society, and if so, what can be done to eradicate them? If they're dangerous, what can be done to eradicate them without having open urban warfare? And that's the topic that we started talking about last week. And we had a lively discussion, and we're going to only be on air tonight until actually 9 p.m. So we want to see if we can engage our callers so that we can actually offer some realistic answers to that question. Are African-American urban street gangs dangerous for American society? And if so, what can be done to eradicate them without having open urban warfare? And we waited for some others to join us. I see that we did have one caller who called in, and hopefully she'll rejoin us in a few minutes because she was on last week and she had some very good comments to make. And, of course, we had a couple of other people that we normally have on the show that may join us in a little while. So while we're waiting for them, I just want to make a few comments, and then I'll turn it back over to my co-host and co-moderator, Dr. Harleen Mustafa for his comments, and then I'll ask our guests. We have just recently been rejoined by the guests that had been on and had left. So after Dr. Halim Mustafa gives us his commentary, I want to ask them if they would like to offer their ideas about the topic. And again, the topic is, are African-American urban street gangs dangerous for American society? And if so, what can be done to eradicate them without having open urban warfare? And we did talk about that last week, but we didn't come up with a lot of solutions. One of the solutions that was offered by two of the panelists last week was something I totally disagree with, but we can disagree. We don't have to be on the same page. This is not a program to try to come to a consensus or to try to come with a majority vote or anything like that. It's just to be able to have a conversation, and we can share agreements and we can share disagreements. We can comment for or against whatever is said, as long as we do it civilly, as long as we do it intelligently and cordially and respectfully, we can disagree all night long. We have to learn as civilized people how to agree to disagree and how to disagree without becoming hostile towards each other. A lot of people think, it seems, that just because you disagree with a person's ideas, that automatically means that you should be hostile to that person. But that's not very intelligent, because you can see just from what happened in the last few days in the Supreme Court, and that's not going to be not the Supreme Court, but the Senate. That's not going to be our topic for this evening. But you saw the senators disagreeing, sometimes passionately, but you didn't see anybody breaking out of their chair to go and knock the other person on the other side of the room upside the head with a chair or a book or a fist. Why? Because these are civilized people, and even though they may have made passionate statements about their positions, they still knew how to agree to disagree and still be civil and respectful to each other. And that's what we want to encourage on this show. You know, express your opinion. Whatever you feel like you want to say, say it in such a way that it's not seditious, because we're not going to be able to have this show if we're not staying within the guidelines of the Patriot Act. Maybe you don't know what the Patriot Act is, but the Patriot Act was passed after 9/11, and basically what that Patriot Act says, I'm going to just kind of say it in a nutshell, is if you know of anybody or you hear about anybody saying anything that's detrimental to the security of the United States, then it's your civic duty under the law to report them to the law enforcement officials so that they can be investigated to make sure they're not actually planning some type of threat against the United States government or the citizens of the United States. And so we don't want anything to be expressed on this show that will cause the Federal Bureau of Investigation to start monitoring the show with the intention of coming over to our houses to find out if we might be planning to do something detrimental to the security of the United States. So we want to keep that in mind as we talk about the issues. You know, we may have some personal feelings about things like that, but on this show, if these feelings are hostile to the government of the United States, please don't express them on this show. I'm asking you, please don't, because we won't be able to have the show, and certainly we won't be very pleased if you do that to the integrity of the show. And the other thing is, you know, if you feel like you cannot respond to somebody without being civil to them, don't respond at all. You know, just back off, get off the phone, go and get yourself a drink of cool water, vent to somebody that's in your household, and when you gotten that out of your system, get back on the show if you want to. But we want to be friendly. We want to be able to enjoy each other's company on the show. So again, we have Brother Dr. Haleem Mustafa. I would like to invite him to come back. We talked earlier, and he does have some commentary. But before I bring you on, Dr. Mustafa, I want to welcome Sister Baina. I want to welcome Sister Stephanie, and I want to see all of you who are regular on our show. So thank you all for joining us again tonight. As we mentioned, Mr. Bianca, we did discuss this topic last week, but Dr. Haleem Mustafa wasn't present. Sister Baina wasn't present. I don't know, you may have joined us late. So we still want to hear your comments on this. So Dr. Mustafa, would you go ahead and let us hear your commentary? Just a minute, I got to put your mic on. Okay, you're on.
Yes,
now.
Good
go
evening.
Ahead.
Good evening and welcome everyone. This is something that we as a people have to be concerned with as to why the young people are being framed as being dangerous. Now, I believe that there's men in the community and women in the community that have a responsibility to make contact with these young people as they're growing up. Because if we don't make contact with them, they feel there's no connection to anyone who really cares about them as an extended family. We have so much breakup of the families. These young people are searching for something to build what is a love base of people who care, and they find the gangs to be such a family or vehicle that lends them to the comfort zone that they were looking for. Also, too, we have to understand, I know there's talk about making drugs legal, and there's talk about other things that in terms of even what you call reparations and all these kind of things. But on the other side, as a people, we have to create the incentives, opportunities for these young people. Now, a lot of the things that they need, we can provide if we have a mind for business or mind for like social responsibility. We can create the kind of social economic development systems. I'm saying that again, social economic development systems that would give the young people an incentive for the ideas of helping the community and making money legitimately without selling drugs, and give them the opportunity in terms of making money to be able to make some real money to supersede the dope dealers who are inviting them to come into that evil world. Now, I want to say the idea of reparations is, for me, an outdated thought. Restitution is more what I kind of look at as a criminal endeavor that happened to us in our ancestral slavery. But the idea, we have to look at how can we reduce the incarceration of our young people, the displacement of the families in our communities, and the voice for us as a people not being unified from the various social, religious, spiritual, civic organizations that reflect our cultural unity, but we're not actually doing it in unity. So we're so fragmented, we really have to rethink ourselves and how we're going to re-energize the purpose in which we are here as Black people, as human beings. But I say Black people specifically because our circumstance is much different than a lot of other people in this country. So we are really like an outcast, but we have to show that God can bless us, and we have to work hard to help these young people understand it so they don't become threats to this country and to us and our families and the communities. That's what I have to say right now, sir.
Okay, well, very good. I just want to make one comment, and I'm not trying to be facetious. In other words, I'm not trying to be funny, as we used to say, but I just want to say this one. Something to think about. You can come back on later. I want to give the others a chance. The first one that was on was Sister Baina, I think, and then Stephanie came on, then Mr. Piaki. So in that order, we'll invite you all to come in. But I just want to say, so don't think I'm trying to be facetious, Dr. Haleem, but who is the we, and when did that we get to be a people? Now, I assume, I don't like to assume, that you mean, when you say we, you mean people of African descent who were displaced through the diaspora during the slavery importation and then populated as slaves and later as free Negroes in America. And I suppose that's the we that you're talking about. And then my other question is, when did that population of human beings become known as a people? The reason why I say that is because as I study history, and I'm a professional historian, I see the development of various peoples. You know, I've studied the history of the Europeans, the various countries in Europe, the British, for an example, the Germans, the Spanish, the French, the Italians, the Dutch, et cetera, et cetera. From the time that they were tribes and later became kingdoms and nations. And you can see the unification and the consolidation and the bringing together of a homogeneous type of culture, even though within those cultures you may have subcultures. For an example, you can go to Italy, which is a nation, hasn't always been a nation, but it used to be separate kingdoms in Italy, but later they became united under one, what we would say, government. But you have those people from the north who are markedly different from the people from the south, et cetera, but yet they consider themselves all Italians, and they have to, they have a common, you know, history or at least some common cultural things. Same thing with the Japanese and the Chinese, which, as you know, the Chinese are made up of many different kinds of people, but yet, you know, today, because the communist government has brought them all together under one rule, they're basically considered to be a people. So my question is, these people, obviously I'm referring still to the African-Americans, we're calling the group now, when did that population become, quote-unquote, a people? Has it happened yet? So that's just something to throw out there. You don't have to respond right now. Later you might want to come on, but I want to go ahead and right now turn it over to Sister Baena, who was the first one, came on after you did, for your comments on the topic or something related to the topic. Sister Baena, welcome, and come on. What do you think?
Well, I shalom American, peace and blessings to everybody, and I don't have any solutions for the gang problem. I just went from a interfaith meeting with the Hindus and Buddhists, Muslims, Christians, Baha, and so on. And they were celebrating Mahatma Gandhi's birthday today. He's 150 years old today. And they were talking about nonviolence. So maybe nonviolence would be something that we could start teaching young people how to be nonviolent. I don't know. I don't have any solutions for that. But I understand and recognize that we have a problem in America with gangs in New York, on Long Island specifically, which I'm sure people heard Donald Trump, our president, make reference to MS-13 because they're so dangerous. Some people are having issues with them because their children are being killed on Long Island. It's not in the news. They're not magnifying anything like that because I guess they don't want any copycatting stuff going on. I don't know. But middle school children were being killed by the MS-13, and they still are on their way home from school. They're walking home from school. I guess you have to kill someone to be initiated into the gang. And they have an area there in Brentwood, New York. I used to live out in that area in Suffolk County. The police are calling the area the killing field because that's where they take these victims. It's like a wooded area near a railroad track, and they kill the children, and they usually kill them two at a time. So that's an issue. And then it's gotten so bad out there that the police sit and wait at the exits off of Southern State Parkway to see if they can catch MS-13 gang members. I don't know how they recognize them or anything like that. But anyway, that's just a little bit that I know about the gangs. I also know here in Richmond County in Augusta, Georgia, they arrested some gang members. And the sheriff has told all the gangs here that he's going to remove them. how or what their problem is with the games. I don't know. I know they're recruiting middle school children ages 12 and up. My niece personally recently was married, and we discovered that the guy that she married is in some game that's called Five Star. I don't know anything about games, but I think America has a history of games. I guess that's what the West Side Story is all about, the play or movie or whatever is all about games. I think I can't remember exactly, but maybe we could start a movement or something to teach them nonviolence. I don't know, but I think our young people they want to belong. They want to have a sense of community, and African American people are just remnants of what we're remnants of human beings. We're just like torn apart. All this is left over from slavery, where our families were ripped apart, but we never even got to know what a family was about or what it meant to have someone really love you or what a real family is. But we're such dysfunctional people, and we have issues that other people don't have, first of all, that we need to address. And I can't put my finger on any one specific thing to say why there are gangs or why gangs exist. Because look, the KKK is a gang. I can look at the GOP as a gang. I can look at the Democratic Party as a gang. I mean, what defines a gang, first of all? And I'm not sure about all of that. All I know is it's getting to be an issue. Something that's out of control. And I think that it is a form of chaos that's invading American society, or maybe it never left. Maybe it's always been there. Maybe it came with European Americans. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I think it's something that needs to be researched more. All I know is Donald Trump was talking about putting up a wall. Now he's not saying anything else about the wall anymore. I guess that's because he's got his NAFTA thing going with Mexico and Canada. I don't know. But the MS-13, they're already here. And there's so many gangs. I mean, how many gangs are there here in America? We don't even know that. There's so many things that need to be addressed. All I do know is that some of the gang people out of Chicago said somebody has dropped a massive load of weapons in the environment there. So I don't know what that's all about. I don't know if they would drop there for the gangs to freely get them. If someone trying to start so much chaos in our society that Donald Trump will be able to declare martial law, or I don't know. There's so many things going on right now in this country and around the world. It is unbelievable. I mean, it's mind-boggling and overwhelming. So I don't have any solutions. I'm just looking at this. I'm trying to take in a bird's-eye view, and I want to listen to what other people have to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sister Vanda. So we're going to go ahead and let Sister Stephanie chime in. She was the next person. We've got a number of people on tonight. We want to give everybody a chance. So kind of keep your first comments a little brief so we can go around and let everybody have a chance to at least open up with some comments, and then we'll go back around again where you can expand on your comments that you made. So, Sister Stephanie, welcome to the show again. You were on last week, so you're familiar with the topic. You gave some good ideas last week. So if you would like, since we have some new people listening, both globally through the Internet and on the telephonic program tonight, you might want to reiterate some of the things you offered last week. So welcome to the show, Stephanie. Stephanie, are you there?
I'm sorry. Hi, everyone. I didn't realize I was still on mute. I'm just going to pretty much reiterate what I said last week. You know, I come from a large family. lots of sisters and brothers, and we none of us ever joined a gang. We had a lot of things to do. You know, our parents kept us busy in things, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, church, ceramic classes, playing sports, cooking, all types of things, including our studies. Our parents also knew who our friends were. We weren't allowed to just hang out with anyone. And that's what needs to be going on now. But unfortunately, some of the things nowadays are so expensive. You know, everybody can't afford it. I mean, look what it costs to go to Disneyland. Look what it costs to go to the zoo, to go swimming, to be a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout, or to take ballet classes. Everything is so expensive nowadays. And at the same time, I would say it's well worth it to get your child in as many activities as you can have them into, keep them busy. They won't have time to run with gangs, because that's pretty much how gangs form. I remember I lived in southeast San Diego. There's lots of gangs there. And on the corner of my house, there was a cul-de-sac. And there was a lot of teenagers, probably about 16, 18 of them, maybe not that many. But they hung out there at that cul-de-sac every day from sunup to sundown. Now, by them being there, no, they weren't out in the neighborhood doing damage, but it just wasn't good. They were there. They were the neighborhood teenagers, and they formed together right there because they had nothing else to do, nothing. And I think that if they each, the families had had them into different things, they wouldn't have had to be hanging out right there. But another thing that starts up gangs is once young people get in trouble and they are incarcerated, there they're going to have to join a gang to be protected. You know, and it's not just African Americans. These gangs are Asians, Mexicans, Italians, and like Baena said, just all these nationalities of gangs, and then gangs get political and all this type of stuff. But bottom line, we need to have more things for young people to do. If a young person is in your household, make sure that they have creative things and positive things to get into so they don't have time for the gangs. That is how gangs will get started. Kids don't have nothing to do. They're not a part of anything. And then they hang with other kids who have nothing to do and who are not a part of anything. And before you know it, they're in a big gang circle. You know, so it can be avoided. I don't know how we tear it down. But that would be one way of kind of breaking it up and avoiding starting up more gangs. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, Stephanie, thank you so much. And I want to welcome one of our oldest veterans of the show. Not old necessarily in age. I don't really know his age, but I know he's been on the show almost from the first week that we began. Mr. Pianke, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well tonight. The course of events happened. I'm happy of.
Oh, well, we won't get into the politics. We have all different kinds of opinions on the political show or the political events that are going on. But I definitely respect.
Hey, I understand. Yeah, and I guess you're talking about the issue of gangs, street gangs.
Yeah, we kind of continue from last week because we didn't really exhaust that topic, and we're only going to go till 9 o'clock Eastern time tonight. But we definitely want to hear the opinion. Well, we've got some new people that visit us tonight, so we want to see what they say.
Well, I still contend with my premise from last week. It was one way, to eliminate a lot of the violence and senseless killing, as it revolves around the distribution and sales of street drugs, is to legalize them. And that would allow addicts to go to a local dispensary that's set up and under the guidelines of a legislation where they can receive their fix. It would be in a safe quantity and a quality, and they can be monitored. And also, they can sign up for treatment in order to get off of their habit. With the profit margin being so great, even if I would believe that, and I'm not sure because I don't know what people pay for what, but it could be taxed, and that taxation could go toward treatment. That taxation could go toward other problems in the community too. So that's my solution. I can't tell you anything much else about that element. I know it causes a lot of problems. The risk of innocent people being caught up in those events, whether they're rushing into a Starbucks and having shootouts with somebody who's there, or whether they're doing these infamous drive-bys and haphazardly shooting people, or whether they're trying to recruit kids, young people, to get involved in that illicit activity. So it's get rid of one thing at a time and then work on whatever remains. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you so much, Mr. Bianchi. So we do have several others who have joined us. I believe I see Sister Gail's number from the previous shows. Sister Gail, is that you I'm seeing coming up on the phone line? Okay, maybe that's not Sister Gail. If it is, Sister Gail, welcome. Is that you, Sister Gail? Okay, I just want to do a radio check as we call it in the U.S. military. Brother Mustafa, can you hear me?
Hello. I hear you loud and clear. I hear you very loud and clear. Loud and clear, sir.
Oh, just want to make sure I'm broadcasting. So I thought it was Sister Gail. If it's not, then I apologize. But we do have two other callers, and one of you is from the 562 area code. The last three didn't. So your phone number, 515. We want to welcome you. And then we have another caller from the 313 area code. And your last digit is a 222. So we'd like to have our 562 caller chime in. What do you think about this?
Oh, I'm still trying to. Hi, this is Bernadette, and I'm still trying to understand what the topic is about. So I'm just listening for now.
Okay, well let me just go ahead and repeat the topic, and you can still listen. But the topic is this: are African American urban street gangs dangerous for American society? If so, what can be done to eradicate them if they're dangerous? Obviously, we don't want them to continue to proliferate and to be a danger to society, so they should be eradicated if they are dangerous. So if they're dangerous, what can be done to eradicate them without having open urban warfare? Now, I mention that because, you know, you have people in law enforcement, and I've read some, you know, documents that indicate that the law enforcement officials would like to criminalize even belonging to a gang, especially if that gang has been guilty of having a history of breaking the law, whether it's selling drugs or mugging people or hijacking cars or whatever. And so the law enforcement people say, well, they just want to make belonging to a gang illegal, and so that way they can round up all the gang members and put them in prison. And, of course, you know, the gang members are not going to go down without a fight. And now since they have military-style weapons, you can expect that if the police decided to try to round them up, there would be probably urban warfare, open urban warfare, and a lot of innocent people would get killed in the crossfire. Be just like a war zone over in Afghanistan or Iraq or someplace in our neighborhood. So we don't want that. So if these gangs are dangerous for American society, what can be done to eradicate them without having open urban warfare? So that's the topic. I expanded on it a little bit, but that's the topic.
Okay, thank you.
Did you want to still listen or did you want to comment, Bernadette?
I'm going to listen because personally, I don't really think my opinion would matter at this time, but I think a lot of these things are a setup. I live in Hawaiian Gardens, and most of the teenagers that I have seen achieve very well here were not gang members at the time. You will not find anyone black area of Lakewood within the area of Hawaiian Gardens and a lot of Orange County. They would not hire these teenagers for a job, and that included my daughter. And I've noticed that a lot of these teens, after having graduated from high school and not being given the opportunity to work, some have turned to drugs, some have begun selling drugs. I've witnessed it with my own eyes, some amazing teenagers that were highly gifted. We have police officers here that we all have witnessed with our eyes that have planted drugs on kids that never even had drugs before. I think the government knows what he's doing, and I'm not blaming the government completely, but I'm just saying I think a lot of these things are setups. And if you look in certain neighborhoods like Beverly Hills, when I go to Beverly Hills in that area with my daughter who attends UCLA, it's completely different than from here. We have all the liquor stores here. You will not find a liquor store in Beverly Hills. You have a lot of children and teenagers that hang out, but you don't see that in Beverly Hills. So I just think that a lot of the parents who, like in my neighborhood, you have the two parents that are working, and you don't really see the parents around. I personally have a friend that has 7 children. She and her husband work 18 hours a day, and they make over $100,000 a year, but they're never home. They're so busy trying to provide for the family, they really don't have time, except for the weekends, to spend time with the kids. And with the cost of living and people are trying to make ends meet, and then there's not really a lot of programs available for the students, for the young teenagers around here. What can one really say at this point? I mean, there's really no answers. I just think that there is no opportunities here like there are in other places. So if no one is really willing to give these teenagers things to do and not offering them jobs, boredom will get you in trouble at some point in time. So I really don't have any answers. Because if I did, they wouldn't do it anyway. I just think a lot of things are set up. I really do. Based upon income and, you know, the area you live in. And that's all.
Okay, Bridget. Now, this caller that I'm going to invite to speak now is a very important person. I'm not going to identify him or disclose his history, his claim. He is a very special friend of mine. All are, and a very, very important voice in the African-American community from a historical standpoint as well as his own personal achievements. So I'm going to let him speak for himself if he would like to tell who he is. That's fine. But I can tell you one thing, truthfully, as I say about all of you, every single one of you, but every time that I hear him speak, he always says something that cuts right to the chase. It's very profound and directly addressing how to solve real problems that you all do. So we want to invite our guest to was from the 313 area code. I won't disclose his identity right now. He can do it. But he's from the 313 area code, the last two digits, three digits of 222. Brother, welcome to the program tonight. If you'd like to comment on the topic.
Yes, thank you very much. And I'm very honored to have an opportunity to chime in. And I certainly appreciate your drum roll introduction. So I happen to be the grandson of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, just like you're the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. So we have quite a bit of legacy that precedes us that provides a lot of common between us. But I'll say this, that the social engineers and with statistics, like in the dominant society, you know, since government is a government, the United States of America. The states in this country are the size of countries in Europe. Then this country has established the United Nations, which allowed them to establish international bonds. Individualism is touted, but yet at the same time, government itself is a huge network of social dynamics, and this is one of the reasons why my grandfather, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he may God be pleased with him. You know, he first in Detroit here, the 313 area, wouldn't allow his children to go to school. There was a big to-do about that because the American flag flew over that school. We say these people are not going to, you know, they're what's called miseducation or an education that is not going to allow you to be anything but a tool to someone else. And he had a very serious objection to that. His teacher, a mentor, was under the Ottoman Empire. Now, the Ottoman Empire, that preceded the Saudis. And I'm a published author, too, by the way. Anyway, you know, I'm just saying, a grandson, Elijah Muhammad, I guess you pursue that. Well, look at those two combinations, you can find out what my name is. But I don't want to necessarily get into that too much. Just want to talk, the position of the dominant society, you know, I think I've heard, you know, overtones referenced by various speakers on the line that recognize that, you know, the dominant society is pretty much laid back to some extent when it comes to what we call like a civil war, really, between, you know, that really, it can be identified in a very similar way. It's like a civil war, and gangs, gang affiliations oftentimes, you know, as the one of the brothers mentioned about how it's all about drugs. And certainly it's well established the fact that we don't manufacture weapons. We're not really the Colombian link to drugs. So all of this stuff is things that are sort of tossed out on the table in order to, you know, induce, seduce, and, you know, create havoc, you know. And so, you know, the statistic, you know, which is referenced in my book, as a matter of fact, it came out in 2002. Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, they bought 1,000 copies of the book. Anyway, one of the statistics in there would say if you're born a black male in America, it's a 50% chance you won't make your 25th birthday. But one of the terrible things about that is that 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a black person to take your life. And they, you know, just like here in Detroit, these hospitals, like Ford Hospitals, which is like, you know, some of the top hospitals in the country, they've done studies to say how they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to save young blacks' lives. And yet at the same time, we seem to have so little respect for one another that we'll take each other's life, you know, in such a cavalier way. You know, he disrespected me. And it's horrible, very horrible, you know. It is, you know, the brother, he said that I oftentimes have a comment to make that sometimes speaks to the, cuts to the chase. I spent about a couple of years in Louisiana, just recently just returned here to the Detroit area after spending 13 years here prior to that. But anyway, you know, the small town there, 9,000, two-thirds black, but of course the dominant society still were the Caucasians that, you know, governed, you know. And but in any case, I'm cut to the chase here. The my own, like I said, I was went to a parochial school, under Elijah Muhammad's school set up, the Nation of Islam. For the first 12 years, from 4 years old to 16, I graduated high school at 16. Went to college for a couple of years, then decided to drop out of that after a couple of years, studying Socrates, deductive reasoning, and things of that nature. But and Socrates went to Oxford University, which is one of the oldest seminaries in the world, and he's the one who brought democracy. But then, you know, Socrates also invited to take hemlock, just like, you know, so I guess he was too smart for the people who, you know, who governed. But anyway, cutting to the chase here, though, is that I feel that primarily, I mean, see, in Africa, I'm speaking to probably some of my own personal woes, but in Africa, a woman cannot take your babies. Adam, man, he was made the guardian of the sperm of life. And in Africa, if you, for some reason, your wife and you cannot see eye to eye, she can't take your babies, you know. But then today, so often, I mean, she takes your babies. She then they are raised to oftentimes, you know, have the bitterness left with them from the separation. And, you know, anyway, this spiral, you know, and after 15 generations of being chattel, you know, I mean, the color purple, I think Oprah came out with that. I mean, but I had a personal issue with that because I saved $100 million to produce a picture that only further demigrates a black man. And the black man that she's identifying was the product of 15 generations of, as being a chattel. I mean, she didn't choose to, showcase Booker T. Washington's life or Frederick Douglass's life, George Washington Carver's life. You know, why would she showcase the life of a man, you know, that, you know, anyway, I have issues, personal issues with that. But I'm just saying, you know, that's my comment. I don't want to, you know, be too prolix, go on and on with this. But yeah, the gangs, I think gangs spring up because they feel as though, you know, just like this is United States, you know, they say we have to unite together. So then, I mean, I mean, you know, the government, you know, this government, you know, it, you know, I mean, they're, you know, this is electronic monitoring. what we are being afforded right now, you know, through the internet, you know, to vent our sense of distress, you know, I mean, communication, you know, all of these elements are, you know, closely monitored by the government. You know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that seems like to me that it has to be just like even Minister Malcolm, got him recently. He just spoke about there's a record he made, which was played when I was in college in '67. He said grassroots come together. You know, I think that theme is still, you know, a viable theme. You know, I think so I'm just saying, you know, one of the principal foundations of the nation that as my grandfather, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, sought to establish, I feel is so key and presidential. That is, you know, we have to have respect for one another, and it seems like that has been really, you know, the main issue. And the fact that this country would have the audacity to elect a president who 4 months before he was elected, he would pose with two Ku Klux Klan under both arms, with a cross burning in the background. I mean, and the fact that this country would elect a man, with those credentials, you know, after, you know, you watch the movie Hamburger Hill, you know, or which happened in Vietnam, or, you know, the Apocalypse Now, or, you know, and see how the horrors that were visited, all of those things happened during my era. I was of age, although I was fortunate to receive a conscientious objector, I was spared that, this personal experience. I mean, but even, I mean, the Tuskegee Airmen, I mean, the sacrifice, the blood that black people have put into the soil of this country and the soil of other countries. My grandfather on my mother's side, he served in the Philippines. Then 70% of us are of the indigenous, the natives. My great grandmother on my mother's side, she was Mayan. My great grandmother on my father's side, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's mother, her father was a pure-blooded Cherokee. We were all here before these Europeans that Europe washed out of their jail cells, you know, and even the Indian himself, he said, when they just killed off 200 million buffalo because the Indian depended on the buffalo for his hide and for his meat. But then Buffalo Bill, during those 10, 200 million, well, they just killed them off just to, you know, because the Indian depended on him. So the Indians say, it's no way that the Great Spirit could have created this creature that would murder the buffalo. He said, you know, so the Indians say, before he submit to this man, he would rather go to the happy hunting ground. But and then you have the same theme being echoed by, you know, pop stars like, you know, 50 Cent, who says, get rich or die trying, with this music. It's, for me, I think I've shared this with other people, I think some of this music should be outlawed to the point of, say, contributing to the delinquency of a minor. It's just horribly offensive to any civilized country. And then it's being broadcast all over the world as being a part of the black culture, which is a far cry from, you know, from the intellectual mindset of many black people. But there's people who actually are seeking to have a sober-minded address to the issue, are swept under the carpet by the dominant, you know, dominance of this culture that's in the inculcated in the music. I mean, We are not the people that we were when Dr. King spoke on the Washington Monument. We are not that same people. You know, morally, culturally, we have been sucked into the cesspool of European European habits moral decay. I mean, we were told that don't even go to Europe because Europe is a moral cesspool. I mean, I know a guy when I came here, he went into D-Day in World War II. He was telling me how when they pulled up in the American troops pulled up in the truck with the soldiers. They sent a dozen young boys to go down on the troops. I mean, this is the morality of Europe. I mean, and it's being visited on this country, and this country it seemed like it's come to embrace it. I mean, this whole issue, even talking about Roe versus Wade and the overturn of Roe versus Wade, you know. They say America has thrown, which is one of the statistics quoted in my book as well, say America has thrown 40 million babies in the garbage can, and some of the nurses who assisted in those abortions, they say some of the babies were still moving in the garbage can. I mean, I watched a movie when I was coming up, you know, Alfie, you know, and the guy, he looked over in the garbage can after the abortion. He could not help but, you know, bring up his food. It was, you know, regurgitate. Barf. I mean, what word you want to use? But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, Christ said, "As you treat the least of mine, so you treat me." Where is that moral code? What happened to? I mean, where is this country going? In God we trust. You know, what God are we talking about? You know, thank you for giving me a few moments, brother. Amen. Musa, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And I feel confident that you will not be displeased if I announce your name, since you said you told the audience you are the grandson of God, Elijah Muhammad. So.
Yes, I adopted the name Jesus Muhammad Ali. If you want to look that up, yep. You know, I adopted that name. My father was Muhammad Ali's manager, his mentor. My grandfather gave the boxer that name, but I met with King Faisal in 1968, and they told me I had to change my name. I was originally named after my father, but I did embrace and adopt that name. So it's not a, you know, hard name to remember.
Right. Well, Brother Jesus Muhammad Ali, thank you so much. And I do want to talk to you after the show. We're going to wrap up. I had mentioned earlier we were going to wrap up at 9:00. We have reached that hour, but I want to go around Robin, as we say, to give everyone a chance to make a closing comment. We'll go back to our regular veteran panelists. Mr. Piyaki, would you like to make a final comment before we close out?
Well, I was going to say that you on this topic of gangs, I gave my opinion. I think the United States is the best country in the world at this present time in history for my family and me, and for those other that's black that want to look at it that way. There's many opportunities here. You have education, excellence. You don't have to worry about having food poisoning. You hit the light switch, something positive happened. And some of these members in these specific gangs that come out of South America, I think they should be hunted down and round up, and rather than let them continue to mingle and exist within the population causing harm, as was forementioned, you know, earlier. So that's my comment.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Ms. Piatti. And Stephanie, would you like to make a closing comment before we wrap up?
Yes, I would. I'd just like to say, you know, I've known so many gangbangers in my lifetime, and a whole lot of times the gangbangers are not on drugs. So maybe their parents might be on drugs or something, but those gangbangers, they might be selling some drugs. They ain't on no drugs. Some might be, but a whole lot of them are not. I still stick with what I say, that we just need to bring back more things, especially in each individual household, more things for these young people to do, and that's creative, that's keeps them busy, that keeps them away from starting to hang out with the gang in the first place. And I want to thank that brother that I just heard speak, Jesus Muhammad Ali. Thank you very much. Even though you just subject, it all made sense. I agree with you on a whole lot of what you were saying. I just couldn't say anything. We don't want people in our country on drugs. I just want to say that I'm sure we can work something out better than saying make drugs legal. We don't want a bunch of people going into the pits of hell and being out of their God-given state of mind. That affects everyone. I'm sure there are some better solutions than that. So on the spiritual side, for sure. But thank you all for having me speak tonight. Good night, everyone.
Okay.
Good night.
Thank you. You wanted to reserve your speaking so you can listen. But before we close, would you like to comment again and say something?
Yes, I would. I think that we have to take the plank out of our own eyes before we pluck it out of someone else's, meaning gang member starts in the White House. And secondly, I agree that, well, first I would like to say outside of that, that black people and poor people cannot fly all over the country to bring drugs here. There are planes that are dropping drugs here, and they're coming by boat. They're coming in through tunnels. They're coming in through ways that people don't have, who are poor, don't have the funds to do that. It's a setup. There are police officers who are also actively involved in the government, as well as FBI agents, who are involved in trafficking teenagers and youngsters, young children. We have had a couple of police officers that were caught here trafficking and selling drugs as well. So as long as things are being put out there in the public as a setup, they're not providing jobs. You know, you have parents who are trying to make ends meet with the children. It's just the way the system is set up. You can tell that, you know, money is going to someone who's very wealthy that is strategizing this. The prisons is money for a lot of investors. The more that they round up people to fill up those prisons, that's the more money that they make. So as I mentioned before, if we want to get rid of the gang members here, we have to get rid of the gang members in the White House. And, you know, until we can find a way to come together financially to build facilities or places where the teenagers can go, maybe to get, you know, to learn computers or learn, you know, different trades. Or for the students who want to get a college education, well, if you got in trouble with the law, you can't go. And also for some people, their parents work, their parents make too much money to get financial help to go to college. And even though a lot of these students are not living at home, you still have to go by your parents' income until you're 25. So there's just a lot of catch-22s. I mean, sometimes we can see a way out, and then there's other times there's like those little, how can I say that, those little dead ends that we run into. So, and for the drugs, I do agree with the young man that said we need to legalize drugs, and the reason why I say that is you can't stop addicts from getting dope. However, if there are facilities that have been discussed on the news that have nurses there, they have the meds there just in case they overdose to prevent them from dying, I would rather see someone go to a facility to do their drugs because they're being watched. And if they do overtake the drugs, there is medicine there to help them. There's a bed for them until they can get a little better. Well, you know, instead of being in the streets taking the drugs and then you just die and people just leave you there, I think I would rather see a facility that is available for them. And if they are ready to get clean, then they can have some type of services for them available. But I do agree with having clinics or different facilities for people to safely get high if this is what they want to do. Because, you know, these young girls, young guys that are out here getting high, a lot of them talk about how people are raping them and how they are being taken advantage of. So if they are in a facility, that can eliminate a lot of people being raped or killed or mugged while they're high. And, you know, they can have someone that looks out after them, because even though it's a spiritual situation, for some who disagree with that, not everybody is spiritual. So we have to look at those who are not choosing to be spiritual. And then you do have a lot of drugs in the church. So, I mean, a lot of drug users are in the church. You have pastors that are using drugs. But I would just say I'd rather have someone to go to a place that is of a safe haven for them and have someone to oversee them to make sure that while they are using drugs, they're not sharing the needles, everything is clean for them. I'm all for it when it comes to that. It's almost like the teenagers who sleep behind their parents' back and they're drinking, you know, and they're clustered together where no one knows, and that's how things happen. But if they have a place they can go, it's a little bit more safer for them. So, yes, I agree with that as well. They should legalize the drugs.
Who's going to pay for all that?
Well, the news had talked about that already.
Time. We've reached the end of our time. We can continue this at another time. We meet in the Spanish room every Saturday at 8 p.m. And we're set up. We can go for up 2 hours if we want to, but we're going to close out now. I want to thank everybody that participated tonight. It's been a lively conversation, different views, different opinions, all good. I do want to announce that this is to our global listening audience, others who are on the line, if you have a topic that you would like for us to discuss, if you text message me at this number, I'm going to repeat it 3 times, so if you need to go get something to write with, I will try to give you a little time to do that. But the number is 706-399-5006. And if you have a topic that you want us to discuss, try to get it to me not later than Thursday. I would say Friday evening at the latest, because I set the show up usually on Saturday afternoon, but I like to look at the different topics and make a decision if I get several suggestions. Again, the number is 706-399-5006. To those in our global audience, you don't have to put your name in the text message if you don't want to. I usually like to know who text messages are coming from, but, you know, that's not a big thing. If you just want to make a suggestion, send a text to me at 706-399-5006. Again, thank you all for participating. For those of you listening via the Internet, thank you for listening. God bless all of you, and may you have a good, safe remainder of the weekend, and hopefully we'll join again together next Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern.